HLN Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the third episode of the CalcioLand Podcast of the Week. So today is a Freeform Friday episode. We got a lot to cover. We have a great interview with my friend Rob from Juve FC at the end of the podcast. We have your fantastic Twitter questions. And just as we were getting ready for the podcast, there was breaking news on Milan's ownership on the Ricketts family, the current owners of the Chicago Cubs, potentially buying Milan. So we'll have my colleague Claudio Perfetto, who's a big fan of American sports and baseball and who covers Milan closely, give us his take. So it should be a fun podcast. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our great friend, producer, co-host, maker of viral videos on Chelsea that are getting a lot of traction. If you haven't seen them yet, definitely watch our friend Alex. So Alex Goldberg's on. I want to ask you about Buffon. So Alex, we've talked about him joining PSG a while back. I feel like it was really a lot of news to digest. I think we were pretty fair and covered it from a lot of angles. But now that, some time has passed and it's just a matter of time till that news becomes official, what's your take on that move in general?
Yeah, honestly, the longer time goes on, the more I love it, especially with maybe watching Neymar in the World Cup. And Neymar is obviously an incredible player, a top five player for me. I don't know about others. But if there's one thing that Neymar might consistently struggle with, it's handling everything, all of the attention that he obviously attracts. And I think, more importantly, PSG is based on just winning the damn Champions League. We've talked about that. We know they're going to win the league, barring a crazy good season from Monaco. They're built to win Ligue 1 easily, but their goal is to win the Champions League. That's what Gigi still needs to do. And I think Gigi, no matter how much or how little he plays, I think having a presence like Gigi in the dressing room will go so far for a player like Neymar. It'll go so far for a player like Verratti if he's still on the club. I think it would be a brilliant signing for PSG because I've talked about it before. There's just a missing identity with PSG that I'm not even sure a manager can instill, even though I do love the hire of Thomas Tuchel, but that's a young manager. I mean, Gigi and him are almost the same in age. I think Gigi would be a great signing for PSG, but honestly, less about what he can do between the sticks at this point and more just what he brings, the intangibles that he brings. And also, they still will probably have Thiago Silva. Can you get much more sure-handed than having Thiago Silva, who's still a great center back, definitely a better center back than Gigi is a keeper right now, but still having the experience of a Thiago Silva and a Gigi Buffon, I think that's brilliant. I think PSG would be a much more prepared team, David, if they got Gigi. So that's my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, so you covered very well the PSG side, and I totally agree with everything you said. So I'm going to take it more from the Juve's point of view. And again, at the end of the podcast, we have a great interview with my friend Rob from Juve FC, and I asked him basically the same. So I have more thoughts on this, maybe on the fan perspective, tribalism, something Dre Cordero is very familiar with. And I'm just really fascinated by the reaction of Juve fans to the news of Buffon going to PSG. To me, it seems almost all the reactions on why would Buffon want to keep playing if he wanted to? Why isn't he going to MLS or China? Why isn't he like Iniesta refusing to, you know, potentially face us? And I think this, I get that point of view, but I think this really misses a very important element in all this. I think if you asked Buffon or any Juve fan, had Buffon been given the option of staying at Juve next season, I have a strong inkling that he almost certainly would have. I think when you look at the state of goalkeeping, look at the Champions League final, look at what we've seen in the World Cup, I think Buffon is more than an above-average keeper. Not the best keeper in the world, not vintage Buffon, but not a liability. I felt every time he made a mistake, it became a knee-jerk reaction that he should just retire, but we've seen keepers of all ages, and even the top ones, we've seen De Gea make mistakes in the World Cup. We've seen Donnarumma having a difficult season, and he's only 19, 20 years old. So I don't blame Buffon for wanting to keep playing. And I think the comparison to Iniesta isn't exactly accurate because Iniesta had a lifetime contract with Barcelona. He wasn't pushed out the door. Iniesta just wanted a new challenge and, you know, wants to go to Japan and make a lot of money. But, you know, he had the option of staying at Barcelona. So I don't think it's exactly fair to Buffon to compare him to that. I think the better comparison is Del Piero, another Juve legend. Juve had, you know, decided this would be the end for Del Piero. They didn't want to get emotional about it, and they said, this is it. But at the same time, we also know Juve is a club that's always at the mercy of the player's will. If a big-name player wants to go, they won't stand in their way. But it seems if the player's will of a legend is to stay an extra year, maybe they're not that into it. And the final thought that I have on all this is during Buffon's press conference, the spin that they put as to why he was leaving Juve was that it wouldn't be fair to Szczesny to have such a big shadow cast over him with Buffon. So every time if he made a mistake, people would say, oh, we need to bring Buffon back in. That sounded all good until Juve went out and signed Perin, a much younger goalkeeper who's going to be in essentially competing with Szczesny and is going to be a shadow over him for a while. So I'm very interested by this whole Buffon thing, and I have to say I'm really fascinated by the reaction of Juve fans who are so quick to judge the club on the transfer market if a big name leaves or if they don't spend, and how they're kind of getting a pass on the Buffon thing. So I find that really, really interesting. And another thing that I find really interesting is right before we were getting ready to record the podcast, there was the news on the Milan ownership. The Elliott Fund is one step closer to taking over the club, but there is the press release from the Ricketts family, who are the owners of the Chicago Cubs, and they said they are more than interested in buying Milan outright. So I'm going to have my colleague Claudio Perfetto come on. He's a big baseball fan. You're going to hear I asked him about it. Before we get to that, Alex is also a big fan of baseball. So, Alex, what's your take on the way the Cubs have been run in the past few years? And do you think Milan fans should be excited by this news?
Absolutely. This would be huge for Milan fans, in my opinion. The Cubs have been run maybe better than any baseball team in the last 4, 5, 6 years. I'm a Red Sox fan, and I was very upset that Theo Epstein, who was the Red Sox general manager, eventually left for the Chicago Cubs. And guess what happened not too long after that for the Chicago Cubs? They ended their 71-year curse and won the World Series. They built a brilliant baseball team, but more importantly, it shows that the Ricketts family knew who to hire, and that was the right man for the job, Theo Epstein, a brilliant baseball mind. But they really did more than that. They really instilled quite a great culture over there in Chicago and kept the legacy. This is important for Milan fans. Milan has such a legacy. There's such an aura to AC Milan, and there absolutely is with the Chicago Cubs as well. And the Ricketts family definitely maintained how special the Chicago Cubs are. And that's really commendable, because it's not easy. I know this from experience, not that I was within the Red Sox, but I was a Red Sox fan. The Red Sox had a curse. It was not easy for it to be ended. The Ricketts family deserves a lot of praise for what they've done in Chicago. So I think that would be brilliant for AC Milan fans.
What a ringing endorsement. And now let's keep it going by hearing what Claudio Perfetto has to say about it. So just as we were getting ready to record the podcast, we had the news on the Ricketts family, who owns the Chicago Cubs here in the United States, putting out a press release that they are interested in buying Milan. So I wanted to have someone come on and give us an opinion on this development. I used to be a big baseball fan up until, I'd say, about 9 years ago. I don't follow the sport that much, but I know a little bit about the Ricketts family. But my rule is I have too much respect for our listeners to improvise. So I had my colleague from the Marzio site, Claudio Perfetto, agree to hop on the podcast. He already wrote an article with the reaction on what happened, and you can read it on CS Sports Football. You can read it on his Twitter account as well. So, Claudio, thank you so much for hopping on Calcioland. So let me ask you very simply. I know you're a big baseball fan. You follow American sports a lot. You've covered Milan a lot in your career. So what's your reaction to the news?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And it's big news. If it goes through, it's going to be a great move for Milan and the future of the club. So the Ricketts family, and Tom Ricketts in particular, he's very wealthy. There's no questions about his finances, like the current Milan owner. He purchased the Chicago Cubs, the baseball team, in 2009. And since then, he's done a great job with the team. That team had a long, long World Series drought. They didn't win for over 100 years when he got there. And he basically supported the club financially, but he doesn't get involved. He's a hands-off owner. He hired Theo Epstein from your Boston Red Sox, who ended the Red Sox curse, and lets him go to work, you know, day in,
and
day out.
When you say my Red Sox, I think you mean Alex, but
yeah. Well, Boston area Red Sox, you know, but Alex, I know, is a bigger Red Sox fan than you are. So it's actually kind of a similar situation. The Cubs were in financial trouble when he took over, and they hadn't won anything in a while. I know Milan's drought hasn't been that long, but it certainly feels that way. And he's going to do well if it goes through. You know, it's all speculation at this point, but it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. So definitely, guys, if you want to read more about it, Claudio has an excellent article on this. So listen, Claudio, I really appreciate you hopping on, giving us a little bit more of a background on this. I'd love to chat with you when we have more time on other topics. Keep up the great work. You guys can read Claudio on Di Marzio's site. He's been a colleague of mine for a while. He's on CS Sports Football. You can read him on SempreMilan.com and the fantastic podcast, An Idiot and an Expert. How's that going with the podcast, Claudio? I know you've been doing a great job with it. Tell our listeners what they can expect on your podcast.
Thanks. It's been going well, and this is certainly the type of topic we're shooting for on the podcast. You know, a little bit of connecting American sports to soccer or football. And, you know, those are the types of things we go for, just different angles on the players and the teams, and it's going well. You know, we're trying to get there. We're getting there with more listeners. It started off well, but, you know, hopefully we can keep growing through the summer and the World Cup.
Awesome. Well, Claudio, thanks so much for joining us, and I'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Thanks, David. Thanks for having
me. Take care. Ciao. Okay, and after that breaking news, let's get back into our routine. Our favorite part of the show are the great Twitter questions that you guys send in using the CalcioLand hashtag. So as always, you have a question on Serie A, transfers, journalism, TV, music, films, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start off with this one. The press release announcing Emre Can's signing mentions that Juventus will incur additional costs of $16 million payable over 2 years. Wasn't this supposed to be a free transfer? And who gets that money?
So I never like to take victory laps, and I'm not going to take a big victory lap, but, you know, I think we were pretty accurate on Milan, saying all along, the sooner the Elliott Fund takes over, the sooner we get some distance from these Chinese over, the better off Milan will be, and I think we're heading in that direction. And another thing that we talked a lot on the podcast for a while is that ultimately there's no such thing as a free transfer. So I think we need to kind of find a new term for describing when a player joins a new club, when his contract with his previous club expired, because there usually are quite a few costs on it. And I think fans all too often just get wrapped up in the transfer fee when there's really other costs associated as well. And I don't think it never was more obvious than in that press release that Juve issued yesterday. So in that press release, as we had in the question, it flat out said that over the next 2 years, Juve has to pay these $16 million in additional costs. And these are going to agents, intermediary fees. So when a player has an expiring contract, you don't have to pay his previous club, but you got to pay someone. Players like to get to, and their agents especially, like to get to this point because they have much more leverage to ask for more. And probably this is one of the reasons why it took so long long for this deal to be official. So again, there's no such thing as a free transfer. Juve literally put it on the press release. I think they have to do it, A, because they're a publicly traded company on the stock market that has to put out their cost for their shareholders, and also because UEFA now wants these costs on agent fees, intermediary fees, to not be so hidden and secret. So you got a real taste of why this isn't a free transfer. I love when people on Twitter are doing the net spend and adding up all the costs in the transfer, and they put a nice fat zero next to Emre Can. It's really not that simple.
All right, well, David, let's move past the transfer itself. Let's stay on Emre Can. How much will Emre Can earn at Juventus?
So this is another thing on free transfers, situations like this. Like, a player can demand more because there isn't a transfer fee to pay, but someone's going to get paid. It's like in economics, they teach you in high school here in the U.S., no such thing as a free lunch. Someone's getting paid on here. And Emre Can is getting a substantial salary. The last I heard is he signed a 4-year deal. The annual wages are going to be around 5.5 million euro. And I want to stress, this is net of taxes. So after taxes, very important distinction. In the UK and the Premier League, they usually report weekly wages, but gross, so before taxes. So a lot of times the wages will look very different in Italy and the UK, and that's why. So when I say 5.5 million for Emre Can, that means net of taxes. That puts him as one of the highest earners at Juve. To give you a frame of reference, Dybala and Higuain are around 7 million. Right now, Emre Can earns more than the Pjanic, the Chiellinis of the world. So I would say the next tier of the top players at Juve, but it's because he arrived on a free transfer. There was a lot of competition from clubs with deep pockets that made him big offers, so it's not surprising that Juve had to, in a way, probably overpay for the wages. That is probably going to have a ripple effect. Now other players on the team are going to want to be closer in line to the salary of Emre Can.
All right, David, let's stay on Juventus. After Emre Can, is it possible Juventus still land two more midfielders?
It's hard to say, because I think the big thing that happened once Juve confirmed Allegri, two players that were potentially on the way out, I think there's a much higher chance they stay. And the two players are two of the Allegri boys, two players that he really loves, and those are Sami Khedira and Mario Mandzukic. You know, on the bright side, if you're a Juve fan that really wants to win the Champions League, those are two guys that will show up big in Champions League matches. So I think there's much more momentum for Khedira staying that would impact Juve's ability to sign another midfielder. It's in that he has just 1 year left on his deal. It wouldn't surprise me if Juve tried to extend that contract. You know, when I look at their midfield, so you'd have Khedira. Let's assume Pjanic is staying. We'll get into it more in the podcast. You have Emre Can. You have Matuidi. You also have Bentancur, who I think is very impressive. So I'm not sure it's realistic for Juve to sign two more midfielders, let alone one big name one. They also have Marchisio under contract as well. So as of now, my guess, unless someone leaves, definitely not two and potentially not even one more.
All right, well, let's stay on a Juve midfielder. This has become quite the talking point. David, what are the odds Pjanic joins Chelsea?
Yeah, man, this was interesting to me. So I wasn't even sure where this rumor started from. It kind of surprised me. Now, earlier in the week on the Marca site, we did report there were some interest from clubs abroad. And look, PSG has never hid the fact that they like Pjanic. Barcelona hasn't either. And the new name is Chelsea. And look, my first reaction was like, you know, Chelsea isn't in the Champions League. Juve is. Pjanic seems to be very happy at Juve. I mean, this is a player who had an exit clause that was very reasonable. He could have gone to play really anywhere and wanted to stay in Italy at Juve. He seems very comfortable there. Then I see that Chelsea isn't in the Champions League. But we've also seen that maybe that doesn't matter that much. I mean, we're seeing Arsenal do very well on the transfer market. We saw Man United when they were in the Champions League. But it would surprise me at this point. Then I found out that all this rumor, I think, started from a Luciano Moggi tweet, the former Juve sporting director, someone that I actually know. And he had like a tweet on Chelsea, Sarri, and Pjanic all with a hashtag. So as of now, it would surprise me. My guess is Pjanic stays put at Juve, but you never know. While we're on the topic of Chelsea, you know, I keep reading all these reports on Sarri and all, and all the reports, and we're not writing anything about it on Di Marzio, but what really is curious to me, all the reports that I read in other places, until I see news of Chelsea negotiating with Napoli, I just don't know, or Chelsea negotiating to get rid of Conte's buyout or paying his clause. Like, to me, all the reports on the Chelsea picking Sarri, that's the easy part. So today, Napoli's president once again said that he has yet to hear from Chelsea and that it's not a given that Sarri will go there. Now, you put a gun to my head. Is it more likely than not that Sarri ends up there? Probably. But I still don't think it's as easy as people are making it out to be.
I'm going to get so many white hairs so quickly. So let's just move on. David, Juventus are close to landing João Cancelo, while Inter signed Kwadwo Asamoah. Which club is better off should these moves go through?
It's a good question. And actually, I tweeted this yesterday. So Di Marzio reported that Juve is very close to landing Cancelo. Interestingly, it's going to be like a straight sale if it goes through for $40 million, not the typical Juve loan with option, forced option to buy to kind of spread out the payment. So it looks very promising for Cancelo at Juve. I think he fits a really big need. Right back has been a pain point for Juve. Dani Alves, you know, had that stretch where he played well in the Champions League, but is in a position where Juve was weak ever since Lick Steiner got old. They've tried a lot of ways to improve at the position. They had Isla, they had De Sciglio, they've tried Cuadrado there. I think Cancelo makes a lot of sense, and I think even for him it'd be great to go to Juve because Cancelo's very good pushing forward. I think Allegri could really improve him tactically the way he has with Cuadrado. I think he'd improve him defensively. So really fills a big need, but comes at a big cost. Asamoah, on the other hand, goes to Inter on a free transfer. Granted, they're paying him very big wages, and I'm sure his agent's getting a nice commission on this as well. But Inter desperately needs a left back. I see a lot of Juve fans get outraged when me and other people point out that last season, Asamoah, I thought, was Juve's best wing back. And I use very specific words because Alexandro definitely had a down season. Alexandro also was used further up on the pitch. But when I look at pure wing backs, I think Asamoah was the most consistent. So I think it's a very good move for Inter. Free transfer in air quotes, but definitely a good value. Long-term, though, I think João Cancelo could be more of a home run for Juve. But the Asamoah-type move isn't the sexiest move because Inter's made quite a few this summer. But I think that's a very shrewd addition. So I think both clubs are big winners with these changes.
All right, how about this one, David? How legit is the Suso to Inter rumor?
This one really kind of came out of the blue because we've seen Inter linked to Malcolm from Bordeaux. It looks very promising, that deal. Actually, Asamoah's agent, Pastorello, is the intermediary in that deal with Bordeaux. I actually think there's plenty of reasons for optimism that Inter will be able to land them. So the Suso one kind of came out of the blue. I don't think this means that Malcolm isn't coming by any means. I believe the rumor. I definitely think it's legit that Inter is interested in him. But, you got to wonder, are they doing this just to kind of bring some disturbance to Milan and, make it a little bit uncomfortable for them? It's also very interesting that the conversation for Suso to Inter started with his agent Lucci was talking to Inter about other things. He's the agent for Vicino. He was talking to Inter about potentially changing his contract and whatnot. And it seems that as those conversations were starting, he threw out to Inter, well, would you be interested in Suso? In a way, this was very reminiscent of last summer because Lucci's Bonucci's agent. Last year, Lucci was meeting with Milan to discuss Suso's extension and also to discuss a potential move of Cuadrado to Milan. And that's when he threw out to Milan, hey, would you be interested in Bonucci? He might be available. So sometimes agents have these conversations conversations with clubs. Sometimes it doesn't lead to anything, and sometimes it might lead to something. Maybe Lucci was doing it to put it out there to create more of a market for Suso to leave. He does have a $40 million exit clause, but that's just valid abroad. But maybe he can kind of use it as leverage. Now, I think Suso is a very good player, but under Gattuso really struggled. If Milan can somehow move Suso and they get Brozovic as part of the deal, who I think instantly would become, would really fill a huge need in their midfield, and they then had enough money to pay Callejon's exit clause, you basically get two players for Suso. I think Milan net-net is improved, because I have doubts that Suso can work out with Gattuso. So definitely an interesting rumor. Maybe it leads to something good for Milan in the end, or maybe it just leads to a bigger market for Suso now that it's out there. And then for Milan fans, it's like, if he goes abroad, they can tell themselves, well, at least he didn't go to Inter. It's not as bad as it could have been.
All right, let's go back to the Nainggolan situation. David, rather than getting a second prospect in the Nainggolan deal, Roma are now getting Davide Santone. How much does that change your mind on the value Roma received?
So on Wednesday, we had both John Solano and Nima Tavali to get their side on the deal. The one thing that changed is, rather than getting a second prospect, Roma would be getting Santone in the deal. And I don't think really Santone is really I don't really see him from a sporting perspective. I think, you know, Inter and Roma and John pointed this out, that it'll be very interesting to see when the deals become official, how they're recorded in their books, because it's all really about amortized value, plus valenze, fitting into FFP for Inter. So to me, it seems like Roma, in a way, maybe doing a favor to Inter and be like, we'll take Santone off your books. You can turn a profit on him. I'm not sure how much of a role Santone would have at Roma. If you're an NBA fan, this kind of feels when a player gets thrown in a trade just to make the salaries work under the cap. So there's something to that. Now, obviously, with Roma, instead of getting a second prospect, getting a player thrown in just for financial consideration, the deal's a little bit worse. There's no other way to spin it. I see the reaction on Roma Twitter is very down on Monchi and the club for selling Nainggolan, and I get it. He was a very important player, someone who turned out moves abroad, really wore the Roma jersey with pride. But I think, I don't know if this is completely a slam dunk for Inter. I think Nainggolan's definitely a huge name. I don't think last season he was nearly as good. I didn't think Nainggolan was going to really fit in Di Francesco's system. He was much better in Spalletti's. So in a vacuum, I think for Roma, moving Nainggolan isn't the worst thing in the world. He's 30 years old. I think he's an old 30. Because of his age, because of the way he plays, his lifestyle off the pitch, but it's a big risk to have him at Inter, a team that's competing against Roma for a Champions League spot, and maybe for the Scudetto if you want to be overly optimistic. And there's the risk of him, with Spalletti played great under him, that he really blows up again. But again, this isn't the Nainggolan from 2 years ago. So for Inter, I definitely think it's a gamble worth taking. I think you absolutely do it. But maybe for Roma, the deal isn't as bad, or people are making it out to be. They're getting, I think, $24 million on that, considering they've pretty much amortized all of Nainggolan's fee in the past. It's almost a pure profit. So there are, maybe it's not as bad as Roma fans are making it out to be.
Okay, fair enough. Next Twitter question, David. What do you make of the Skorupski-Morante swap? Could Morante replace Alisson at Roma?
So this one kind of came out of the blue on Wednesday. It became official today. So Roma's backup keeper, Skorupski, was really good at Empoli, a really impressive keeper there. Barely played because Alisson was so good. He's going to Bologna to start. In exchange, Roma's getting Mirante, who I think is a pretty good Serie A keeper, an above-average keeper, but he's old. He's 35, might be even 36. I definitely think he's coming to Roma to be a backup, regardless of what happens to Alisson. If you remember, though, we had John Solano on Wednesday and asked him point-blank if what he thinks is going to happen with Alisson, and he goes, you know, it's almost certain that he leaves, and I'm in agreement with him. I think Alisson will be at Real Madrid. I think Mirante is a very good insurance policy, and now Roma can maybe sign a keeper who's younger with upside. So I think it's great for Bologna to have Skorupski. I think if Roma moves Alisson, which I think is inevitable, they have some good insurance with a very good backup.
All right, next Twitter question. How about this one, David? Are Napoli willing to loan Milik next season?
So this is a rumor that started on Turkish sites and all, and I've been getting, I love Turkish Twitter, by the way. Shout out to them. So many people have asked me. I'd be shocked if Napoli moves Milik, especially on loan. I think there's a better chance that Mertens is sold than Milik on loan, or even Milik sold outright. I think Milik is a perfect center forward for Ancelotti style. When people asked me about a month ago, who do I think will be the next breakout star in Serie A, kind of like how Milinkovic-Savic is, I think it's going to be Milik. If healthy, I think he's going to be fantastic at Napoli. So no, I really don't see in any way how Napoli would loan him out or even consider selling him. And two, they'd be selling low because he's coming off those knee surgeries. I think they're going to make him the main striker going into next season.
All right, David, how about this? Let's move away from football. What are your favorite movies and your favorite movie scenes?
So I have a feeling this is going to be like the question when someone a while back asked me about which rock albums would I recommend to someone who wants to get into the genre. So I put a lot of thought into this question, but I reserve the right to update the answer because it's so open-ended and I love movies so much that I'm sure I'm going to miss some. So to kind of narrow it down, I was thinking of who my favorite movie directors are. And my three favorite directors are P.T. Anderson, Martin Scorsese, and Quentin Tarantino. So I was thinking, what are my favorite movies that they make and my favorite scene? So P.T. Anderson, obviously, There Will Be Blood. I think probably one of the best movies of the new millennium. There's a scene, and there's so many good scenes, like the opening scene with the oil is amazing. But there's just the scene where Daniel Day-Lewis' character, and this is later on in the film when he's already become a very wealthy man, is just swimming by himself out in California. It's just an incredibly shot scene. Like, it really resonated with me for some reason. And then there's The Master, who I think that's the best movie of the decade, probably, with The Social Network. There's so many scenes in that movie that are just incredible. I think the acting between Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman, just incredible. The scenes they do together are so intense. I could really just picture both those actors going on set, really like a big game, knowing that they're going to square away against another great actor. Interestingly, P.T. Anderson, who's done many movies with Daniel Day-Lewis, when he was asked, you know, which actor has done the most amazing things on your movies, he mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I'm going to say I think Joaquin Phoenix is even better than him in The Master. So for his movies, that's, I'd say, The Master and There Will Be Blood. I also do love Boogie Nights as well. For Martin Scorsese, I'm going to be kind of a hypocrite because when people ask me if I like Casino better than Goodfellas, I say Casino. But when I think of what my favorite Scorsese scenes are, it's two of them are from Goodfellas, and it's the scene when they go to Joe Pesci's mom in the middle of the night to get the equipment to bury the guy out in the woods, and the mom wakes up and starts making dinner for them. It's just an unbelievable scene with De Niro, Ray Liotta, and Joe Pesci, and that's Martin Scorsese's mom who plays Joe Pesci's mom. I mean, that scene's just incredible, hilarious. You could watch it a million times and it'll still, you won't be able to change the station. And I think Scorsese's most impressive scene is when Ray Liotta takes Karen, his wife, who's the actress that does Tony Soprano's shrink in Sopranos, when he takes her to the Copacabana, takes her through the back door, and they set up the table right at the front. That is shot in one frame, one scene. It's just incredible. If you know just a little bit about movie directing, it's just an absolute tour de force. I think a lot of movie critics say that's the best Scorsese scene, and I agree with that, but I do like Casino better than Goodfellas as a movie. And Tarantino, probably my favorite director. I'll never forget seeing that scene with John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson. I think it's the opening scene in Pulp Fiction when they're talking about the Royale with cheese, the cheeseburger, right when they're going to kill someone. You know, that I think when I watched that scene, that's when I decided I wanted to get into writing in some shape or form. I mean, that just blew my mind, the writing of it, the scene. You know, these two guys going to kill someone just talking like two regular guys just absolutely blew me away. Similar to that, the opening scene in Reservoir Dogs when Tarantino himself, they're talking about Madonna songs and they're talking about the what Like a Virgin means. That scene's absolutely hilarious. As far as how a scene is shot, there's a scene in Inglourious Basterds right towards the beginning. Christopher Waltz, who plays the Nazi, he's so incredible in that movie when he goes to the house out in the countryside in France and there's the Jews hiding under the floor. That scene is incredible. It's like vintage Hitchcock scene, I think, as far as like how the scene is shot. That's the best Tarantino scene, but not the best dialogue. Those are in the other movies. But randomly, two other scenes that I really love is the end of Fight Club. I think it's kind of a flawed movie. The first hour is amazing. I think it kind of loses pace in the middle. But the final scene where they destroy all the credit bureaus, get rid of all the credit history of people, and the way they use the music, the Pixies song, Where Is My Mind, just absolutely blows me away. That's a David Fincher movie. We've talked about what a great director he is. That scene, the way the music is used, the CGI, everything. This was the early days of CGI, is amazing. Just talking about that scene gives me goosebumps. But if I have to say my favorite scene ever is in Godfather 2, De Niro playing the young Marlon Brando role when he gets fired from his job selling fruit because the owner has to help out the son of the local mobster, and how he offers De Niro all this food and he doesn't take it. I think he just ends up taking the apple and he goes home to his wife, lost the job. I think they just had a kid and they just has that apple. It's just really such an emotional scene. I really fell in love with De Niro as an actor there. So those are my scenes and movies. I reserve the right to, you know, amend this answer later on. If our listeners have scenes and movies that they love, please send in using the CalcioLand hashtag. But before we get to the interview, Alex, we have a question for you. I've talked about my career. I put that in air quotes. I don't even think we can call that how I got to do the things that I do. But one of our listeners wants to ask you how you got into producing, Alex. So take it away.
All right. A couple years back, maybe 4 or 5 years back, I decided I wanted to get into broadcasting. I wanted to work in sports. So I had went the four-year college route earlier in my life. So I decided instead to go to Connecticut School of Broadcasting, which is a broadcasting school in the United States, many campuses on the East Coast. I graduated from there. I quickly, luckily, got to start producing and interning at WEEI, which, for anybody who doesn't know, that's the official radio station of the Boston Red Sox, and I'm a huge baseball fan. I'm a huge sports fan in general. We've talked about it. So it was pretty cool and surreal for me to be able to produce some Red Sox post games and stuff like that. And then I connected with you, David, on Twitter. I even did I'm going to call it soccer podcast because it was really about American soccer. It was about the New England Revolution and stuff like that. And we had you on as a guest a couple of times. And then about 2 years ago, since I have the studios at my disposal from the broadcasting school that I graduated at, I sent you a text, asked you if you maybe want to do a podcast, and we're here now. So yeah, that's how I started producing. I would say it was really cool to be able to produce Boston Red Sox stuff and Boston sports stuff that I grew up on, but I do like the idea of podcasting a little bit more than live radio. I love listening to live radio, as you do too, David, but I love the idea of producing podcasts. It's a little bit more freeing, I could say. So that's my story.
Awesome. So great stuff. So as always, guys, please keep sending in the question, said yeah, transfers, journalism, movies, TV, music, you name it. We appreciate it. Also, I want to thank you guys for your support. If you want to help the podcast grow, we rely on you as our marketing department. I love the tweets you guys plug in our podcast, letting your followers know what we do. Very important that you subscribe and download our episodes. That's going to help us take the next step. And I want to thank all those who are leaving reviews on iTunes. If you're listening to us on an iPhone, it takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. You want to leave us a comment, we read them all, and we really appreciate it. So let's end it with a great interview with my friend Rob from UVFC. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I look forward to interacting with all our listeners next week. So for the interview part of the podcast, I'm really thrilled to be joined with someone that I've known for, I think, at least 7 or 8 years, but I've never actually spoken to him, which is pretty unbelievable, but this is the brave new world that we're in. So we're joined by my very good friend, Rob, who runs the outstanding Juve FC site. If you follow me on Twitter, this is one of the sites that I like to plug because it's really a great place. If you're a Juve fan, even if you're a Juve hater, there's always a lot of great content on there. So we're going to take a deep dive on Juve. We actually haven't done one of these in a while. So Rob, it's been way too long since I've wanted to have you on Calcioland. It's a pleasure to have you on. So welcome on board this evening.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to finally talk to you. And it's a fantastic podcast. I love what you guys are doing. So more credit to you guys.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch. So before we'll talk in the end about all the exciting things going on your site, but I wanted to take a step back. We're going to take a deep dive on Juve, but I figured we'd start with what the expectations were going into the summer. Juve's been pretty active as is, but before we get to the player movement and whatnot, I wanted to get your take on Allegri, who, despite, you know, winning all these titles in Serie A in a row, doing much better than his predecessor in the Champions League, is still a pretty controversial figure with some Juve fans and a lot of Milan fans. So let me just ask you, as someone who is a big Juve fan and follows them closely, how excited were you of the news that Allegri was coming back to manage Juve moving forward?
Absolutely thrilled. And I know a lot of people probably, I suppose a lot of Juventini in particular probably wouldn't agree with that, but I have so much respect for the guy. I really do. I think he's a fantastic tactician. He's very, very astute. He's really good in, I think, in the critical moments during games. And to have him really sort of show loyalty to you at such a crucial moment, I think he said himself there was a chance that he could have gone to Real Madrid. He turned that down. He's decided to stay on and basically respect his contract. He could even end up staying longer. So he could be, not to make the comparison too early, but he could be sort of, you know, the kind of next Marcello Lippi, in the sense that he's there for a long period of time. We have a lot of success. Obviously, we need to win the Champions League. But yeah, overall, I think I'm really pleased. The only concern that I have at the back of everything is this kind of sort of nagging issue that we've picked up on in the past, where there's sometimes a kind of a breakdown in relations between him and certain players. And I think with someone like Conte, Conte was really adored by everyone, but with Allegri, I think there's definitely a few players that perhaps have left on account of him. So that's the only nagging doubt that I have. Beyond that, thrilled, definitely thrilled.
Yeah, I think you put it very, very well with that. And look, you know, when I look at who else was out there, it would have been very hard for Juve to find anyone better. And the fact that Real Madrid wanted him, to me, really speaks volume about his ability.
Yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit about Juve's movement on the mercato. So before we talk about the specific players they've acquired, who they've linked to, who could leave, let me take you back to the end of the season, right? After the Scudetto celebration, at that moment, if you had to say, what are the team needs? What do we need to get better? What do we need to at least keep the success that we had? What positions would you have identified?
Oh, that's a nice, easy question. Personally, I think I've said this so many times throughout the season, and it's kind of been evident for at least 2-3 seasons. We need quality in the midfield. We have just lacked this. We've had this huge sort of drop off where we had arguably one of the best midfields in Europe, I think, when we had Pirlo and we had Vidal and we had Pogba, and then we sort of lost all three for whatever reason, and we've kind of replaced them with some very good players, don't get me wrong, but we have lacked bite. We've lacked sort of creativity in the center as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it should have been the priority for some seasons. I think we just needed to get some sort of magical superstar quality in midfield.
Yep.
We obviously know that Lee Steiner has left. We know that Asamoah is leaving. We know that Buffon is leaving. We've replaced one of those positions with Perrin.
Yeah. So you've mentioned Perrin, definitely a big addition, and we'll get into later on how you think that's going to shake out with Szczesny. But the other players that are confirmed is we knew Caldara for a while was coming. We knew Spinazzola was coming as well. Now, granted, he's had the knee injury. He'll be out for a little while. Yesterday, Emre Can finally took the medical and officially signed. We know there won't be another Witzel disaster. And I think it's pretty safe to say there's a very good chance while Cancelo is coming, addressing a really big need at the right back. So just looking at Juve's Mercato so far, how satisfied are you with the moves they've made?
I think we still lack in midfield, as I was mentioning before. But in terms of the players that you mentioned, I think those are all really good, promising players. They're at the right age in the sense that we've had this sort of aging kind of core. So bringing in someone like Cancelo for Lick Steiner is you know, going to rejuvenate that position straight away. Caldara is incredibly talented. He's a player that I rate so highly, and I can't wait to see him at Juve, so I think that's going to be brilliant. Emre Can, I'm sort of in two minds in the sense that we didn't get to see lots of him at Liverpool last season, and I'm sort of still... I'm going to wait and see how he pans out playing in Italy. I don't know how well he's going to adapt. I'm sure he'll be okay, but I think it's just one of these moves where midfield has been so key for us, and we really need something special out there. We need somebody that can be a difference maker and someone that can really basically complement the other players that we've got and take us a step forward. So with Emre Can, I'll sort of hold fire and see how he progresses over the course of the first part of the season. But overall, I would say I'm pretty satisfied. I think we've still got a way to go, but yeah, I'm satisfied.
Okay, so let me take you back to what was personally my favorite moment of the Juve season, the image that I kind of remember from the season. And let's see if you remember it. I suspect you do. So after the match against Spurs, the return leg in England, when Juve had that great comeback, there was a beautiful moment between Buffon, Dybala, and Higuain where they just had a big group hug. I thought it was just a very genuine moment. Yeah. And I have to tell you, I find it absolutely shocking that out of those three players, the one who has the best chance at staying at Juve at this moment is Dybala. I would have never said that in the moment had you told me that. We know Buffon is going to PSG. He's definitely not staying at Juve, unfortunately. I'm going to ask you that at the end. We've also had rumors of Higuain potentially leaving, which I have to say I was pretty surprised to see. But let's say, hypothetically, if Higuain leaves, if Juve brings back Morata, and assuming they keep their other offensive players, do you think the attack would still be good enough? Because I have to say, we went the opposite spectrum during the Conte years, Juve winning despite their front line, to now probably being the best department on Juve. So let's say Morata comes in to replace Higuain, and this is purely hypothetical. How would you feel about the attack?
To be honest, not entirely thrilled, because I'm a huge fan of Higuain. I think he is the kind of guy that we've missed since Trezeguet left.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that just delivers. You know, if he's playing in the right system, people may not agree with me, but if he's playing in the right system, he's a guy that gives you sort of 25 goals a season guaranteed in every competition. He didn't get the right amount of service last season. he was very isolated. He had to play a slightly more withdrawn sort of role. So I think he got a lot of stick. I think he took a lot of, you know, hatred sort of on the chin from people saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. And maybe that could be why he's being linked with a move away. Morata is the kind of player for me that still hasn't delivered consistently. He's the kind of guy that it seems that he really lives on confidence, and he needs to have the crowd behind him. He needs to have the coach behind him. He needs to have everything in his favor for you to really see the best of him. And that may not always be the case. You know, players have to endure those tough moments. And for that reason, I just don't feel that he would be... I mean, don't get me wrong. I think he is a very talented player. But if it was Higuain or Morata, it would be, you know, Higuain every day of the week and twice on Sundays, for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Higuain, the typical player who gets a bad rap, the perception thing, like the bad moments he's had in the finals, thing really overshadow everything else that he does so well. So let me ask you about the goalkeeper position. This is certainly, I think a lot of people would have been surprised by the prospect of Pedin coming, especially because Juve has been saying all along that Szczesny was the heir apparent to Buffon. I think Szczesny performed brilliantly for Juve last season. I think he answered the question. I think even the most doubtful Juve fan after seeing Szczesny play has to feel pretty good about him moving forward. And now they bring in Pedin, one of the best goalkeepers in Serie A. So in your opinion, how do you think this is going to shake out? If you had to guess what percentage of the games each would have to play, what would you expect that to be?
I think with Juve, the policy has always been pretty clear, and we've had that, especially over the last seven seasons, where the number one plays through the Serie A campaign, plays through the Champions League games, unless he's injured, and then the backup keeper gets, you know, maybe the Supercoppa and maybe the Coppa d'Italia, and that's kind of the trend. So for me, I saw Pedin coming and thinking, it's great for us to have a backup keeper like that on the bench, but I don't see him starting over Szczesny. I think Szczesny is the guy that has been given these assurances. I think he probably chose Juve on the back of this, knowing that Buffon only had one season. So, yeah, I get the feeling he is going to be the number one. Perhaps somewhere, maybe Pedin is thinking, okay, I'll sort of bide my time and maybe I'll work well in training, and if Szczesny's injured, I can sort of, you know, come in and stake my claim for the number one spot. But I think it would take a really sort of poor run of form for Szczesny to sort of, you know, be dropped and Pedin come in. So as a Juventino, I'm very pleased that we've got two incredible goalkeepers. But for him, I think there's always that kind of feeling that, is he going to end up being like Neto, you know, who left because he just didn't get the opportunity. So that's at the back of my mind. But, yeah, as a Juventino, fantastic for us. But, yeah, I definitely see Szczesny being number one next season unless something very sort of calamitous happens. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other underrated part of the Pedin signing, you look at Napoli and Roma. I mean, Napoli especially scrambling to find the keeper. Alisson's almost certainly leaving Roma. And I think, too, Juve taking him away as an option for both. It's a pretty ruthless move, but that's how Juve rolls. And look, you know, people can hate on them for that, but it's definitely within the rules, and they got to do what's best for them. So speaking of rules and the way Juve operates, I wanted to ask you about this. I'm going to tie it in a little bit to what I have to ask you about Buffon after. So I think one thing that's pretty controversial with Juve fans is the club's policy of being at the mercy of a player's will. And what I mean by that is Juve historically, and this is well before Marotta, that people think this is a Marotta thing. It isn't. This is really an Agnelli family type of policy. Look, if you don't want to be here, we're not going to stand in your way, and we'll let you go. And we've seen in recent years, you know, we've seen players like Vidal, we've seen players like Pirlo, we've seen players like Tevez, you know, Pogba leave because, you know, they wanted to and Juve didn't stand there in their way. On the other hand, we have some other clubs that are a little bit more ruthless. PSG and Bayern Munich are like, okay, you signed a contract, now we're in charge, a little bit more ruthless. So tell me where you stand with Juve's policy with this.
It's kind of like a double-edged sword. In one sense, I love the fact that we work like this because I think sometimes you get players that get to a point in their career and maybe they get jaded, maybe their head gets turned, maybe they start thinking, you know, the grass is greener over there. And before you know it, they're kind of talking that talk. And the concern is always, does that talk spread? You know, do you suddenly have like a sort of a bad apple, and then, you know, before you know it, other players are thinking the same thing. So I look at that and I think it's probably a good policy to move players on if they're not happy. I'm pretty sure they probably have that sort of stipulated when they, you know, sign players in the first place. And I think it's a good policy to move them along if they're not happy, but I don't think it's a good idea for Morata to keep emphasizing it. You know, and every time he sort of he talks, it's like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we will move players on if they're not happy. You know, people know that, Beppe. Just leave it be. We got that understanding. And just to sort of go back, but if you look at a club that in some ways sort of parallels Juve, if you look at Manchester United when Alex Ferguson was there, he had this similar sort of policy. I remember really big players like Van Nistelrooy and Jaap Stam and David Beckham. And it was like as soon as the headline sort of appeared in the newspaper and as soon as you sort of had those feelings of these players a little bit unsettled, that was it. He would move them on, he would get top dollar, and he would have it done within like a heartbeat. So, like you say, we've had that policy for a long time, but it's worked not just for us. I think it works for other clubs as well. So, yeah, great policy to have. I think it's definitely a good thing. Just don't be so vocal about it. And if we give an opportunity, you know, maybe just, you know, people know. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, the way I also see it is like, it's not just about a player leaving a lot and how you replace them too. I mean, the last time Juve won the Champions League, they sold arguably the best offensive Italian player of my lifetime, and Robby Baggio, but they had Del Piero waiting in the wings. And so, you know, if the player is leaving, as long as you have a great replacement, I think it's not that bad. But I'm with you. It seems like Marotta just loves saying that to kind of get himself off the hook if a player leaves. So the reason I asked you this, because it's an interesting point with Juve, but I'm going to tie it in a little bit with Buffon, because we've seen Buffon who doesn't want to stop playing. And I think, you know, maybe had Italy qualified for the World Cup, he would have seen that as the ideal ending. Or maybe, you know, Buffon looks at the state of goalkeeping in general at the top level, and I still think he's one of the best out there. I mean, it's not vintage Buffon. He's not the best goalkeeper in the world, but he's certainly a well above average keeper. So for me, I think Juve on one hand is like, okay, if you want to leave, we'll let you go. But if they have a superstar, and we saw this with Del Piero, where they have kind of a timeline in place for him to leave. And interestingly, you mentioned too with Szczesny, he probably would have never come had Juve not told him there'll be just one more year. So tell me how you feel in general about seeing Buffon at PSG, and that's inevitable, unfortunately, if you are a Juve fan. How do you feel about the whole thing? So I'm going to give you a more open-ended question than just tell me your thoughts on this whole situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so it's sort of on two levels, I suppose. On the level of a sort of a Juventino, I feel like just a little bit sort of sad and a little bit upset that he has decided to play on, that it's not going to be at Juve, that the obvious reason is probably because he feels that he wants to win the Champions League. Maybe PSG is the only club that maybe he could go and do that at, in the sense that they're the only club that would take him on. But at the same time, I feel like, okay, he's done so much for this club. You know, he came down to Serie B with us during Farsopoli, and he was kind of a stalwart. He's been there at the key moments when we really needed him. He's never really sort of turned his head. He's been an incredible goalkeeper, you know, all these years. He sort of rolled back the years. There was the game against Lyon, I think just a couple of seasons back, where I think he had a lot of criticism, and he sort of took it on the chin and said, yeah, fair enough. And then he just delivered one of the most incredible performances you'll ever see from a goalkeeper. So yeah, I think he's given so much to the club, and he's earned that right, for me at least, to be able to say, okay, I want to go here. As long as it's not Inter, you know, it's fine. He can pretty much go anywhere. but at the same time, you know, there's that part of me that just kind of thinking, oh, I wanted him to retire at Juve. You know, we didn't get that chance with Del Piero, and I think with Del Piero, it was, again, the salary. He had another offer lined up, and he sort of knew that the writing was on the wall and that he was going to leave. With Buffon, I had this different thought at the back of my head, like, okay, here's a legend. He hasn't been at the club as long as Del Piero, but he's been there for, you know, 17 years. He's a big part of Juve history. So, yeah, let him retire. Let him take a year out, a couple of years out, come back, play a part back of house, and be part of the Juve family. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's now decided that he wants to play on. And fair enough, you know, more power to him. Let him go. Let him do what he needs to do. He has my blessing. But deep down, yeah, it's painful. Speaking as a Juventino is painful. If I saw it as like a business decision, or the, you know, sort of impartially, sort of outside of myself, I would say, yeah, I can understand that. He's probably going to earn a small fortune there. It's a lovely paycheck, a nice little pension fund.
And Paris, not a bad city to live in either. So
exactly, yeah, absolutely. And he's got a good chance of winning the Champions League. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's Juve that wins the next season. But you know, yeah, speaking as a Juventino, he's earned it. But it is painful. It's not nice to hear. It's not nice to see. So that's my very long-winded answer.
Awesome. Well, let's end it on your fantastic website. Now, I've talked about it on the podcast. Your site is basically where I got started. I remember my first article on your website was about the Juve team that won the Champions League in 86. And I wrote what their FIFA ratings would be and the current player that they most resemble. So that was my first article ever, which was on your site. And your site has grown a ton since. You have one of my favorite writers, Enrico Passarella. People know him as Il Guardaline on Twitter. I mean, I if there's any time I have a question on Serie A, on a player, he's one of the people I go to. So you have some great content on there. So tell our listeners who aren't too familiar about Juve FC what they can expect if they go on your site.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been around for 17 years now, more or less, and I think we're probably at the point where we're probably at our absolute best. So, I mean, in terms of content, we have pretty much everything Juve-related. So we have the day-to-day news, we have club news, anything that's happened, interviews with the players, that kind of stuff. We also cover every single match. So we have previews, as you said, from Enrico. We do match reviews. We do player ratings. We do Q&As with fans from other clubs, you know, ahead of the big games. Pretty much everything that you would probably need, I would like to say, and that probably sounds arrogant, but we put a lot of effort into it. So it pretty much covers everything. And then going forward, as I mentioned, we're hoping to start our own podcast very soon. So that will sort of take off. And somewhere down the line, maybe later in the year, we're hoping to launch sort of a Juve FC app that people can use on their phones, because, yeah, it seems everybody uses mobile phones these days. So that's something else. But, yeah, I'm pretty much constantly trying to think of ways to improve the site, to sort of bring the community together, to offer more and more things. So, yeah, it's like I say, 17 years, but it's still a work in progress. So we're trying to improve every year. So, yeah.
You really do great work. I still go on there regularly. So, Rob, listen, it was an absolute pleasure finally speaking to you in person. Thank you for launching me. Thanks for being on my own podcast. All the best of what you do. And again, it really is a great site. So definitely check it out. So Rob, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much, David. And keep up the great work. You guys are doing a fantastic thing. So yeah, more power to you guys and brilliant stuff.